The contents of this audiobook are not intended to reflect the approval of any government regulatory body. However, what is included here represents the documented findings of healthcare professionals, scientific research groups, and individuals who have experienced positive results with aloe vera or products derived from it.
Aloe Vera, The Inside Story by Bill C. Coates, RPH, CCN, with Robert Ahola. Narrated by Robert Ahola. This book has been specially edited for audio. Introduction, Personal Perspectives. In the course of writing The Silent Healer and some of my previous works, it has always struck me that the most dramatic remembrance of aloe vera's ability to change lives invariably come from individual cases, particularly those involving disease of systemic or internal origins. I also realized at the time that these were the very cases for which there was either difficulty in diagnosis or little clinical data to support the use of aloe as a modality of treatment. All that could be offered at the time was the hope, along with the understanding that this remarkable plant had toxicology reports to verify that it could do no harm. More often than not, in these cases at least, everything else had been tried without success, and just as often there were instances in which stabilized aloe vera was the last resort. Oftentimes, the people seeking help were fortunate enough to be under the care of credulous physicians, therapists, or other medical practitioners who kept a sense of perspective and a willingness to try new remedies. Occasionally, the medical practitioners involved in these cases were not cut from this cloth, and we had to overcome some monumental individual biases and professional resistance to accomplish our objectives. When I realized just how vast this area of exploration promised to be, it also struck me with equal severity that, as open as the field of internal uses of aloe vera was, it was also vulnerable to too much speculation, professional conjecture, and public skepticism. Despite the fact that some clinical studies had been undertaken over the years, I personally found them to be too few and far between to push the healing plant beyond the threshold of mere scientific curiosity, and came to the realization that if any real progress were going to be made, new forces would have to be enlisted, true medical and scientific lions with stature in their fields, for aloe vera to achieve its rightful level of universal acceptance. In the arena of topical medications, where medical evidence of aloe's success were readable, chartable, and well documented, we were winning the battle. I have been able, in the term of my dedication to this plant, been able to see it achieve a measurable level of success in the areas of topical medicine and prolific acceptance in the arena of sports and athletics at the professional, collegiate, and Olympic levels. Gaining the same degree of respectability for its internal uses, I knew, would be the ultimate challenge. But we're getting there. To me, at least, the need to get there is underscored by a number of things. First, I believe the potential benefits for using stabilized aloe vera internally are virtually limitless, and may even exceed the broad-spectrum healing abilities it has already displayed in topical and tissue use. Second, when you consider the stresses of a modern society, when you take into account the rampant pollution and toxins in our environment, the manufactured, processed American convenience diets, and the challenges of a high-tech, highly industrialized society, we are fair game for every hidden danger this strange and often hostile new world offers. My third reason is purely personal. In my time, I've simply seen too many friends, family, and acquaintances helped with this remarkable healing plant, not only to have it cure and treat their systemic ailments, but also to help them have a better quality of life, higher energy levels, and even improved dispositions through the use of aloe's remarkable extract. Heretofore, these latter aspects of aloe vera's innate healing qualities might have well been dismissed either as intangibles or merely wishful thinking. But this book may prove that thinking outdated. We now have studies to show these aspects of human behavior and human performance can not only be enhanced, but measured as well. Aloe Update: Renewed Respectability in the Modern Era. In a way, it seems as if it has taken place overnight. Even though the corroborative evidence can be found in chronicles of traditional usage and patterns of breakthrough and revelation that can be accurately traced for at least four millennia, the world of science has suddenly erupted with discoveries of a new healer, a marvel of biochemistry that virtually beggars comparison and pales all records that have preceded it. It is not a new mystery drug manufactured in the labs. It is not some miracle therapy derived from a series of medications fraught with side effects and complications. Then what is it? Why has it made such a dramatic impact in recent years? And what is the potential legacy of these findings? At the risk of sounding too melodramatic or perhaps protesting too much, let's first take a look at some of the occasions of these amazing discoveries and evaluate the common denominator according to the degree of its impact. And yes, since the name is on the title, it should not surprise anyone to discover that the healant in question is aloe vera. However, there's also more to it than one can glean at first impression. Because in the light of recent discoveries in the last decade, it's not just aloe vera the plant that is the topic of discussion, nor is it the various stabilized compounds derived from aloe vera. Now there are new initiatives being set forth, and those come in the form of study, testing, and clinical applications of key isolated ingredients from the plant and from the utilization of compounds from those exclusive ingredients. Until recently, this would not have been possible, since it had traditionally been a matter of conjecture and heated debate over what truly constituted the active ingredient in the aloe complex. Prior to 1987, findings about the plant's true active ingredient amounted at best to hypotheses over its source or even how that source could be traced. Its distinction as a plant that was extremely difficult to fingerprint remained intact, and it remained a reputation that was challenged, but never put to rest. Even today, research continues to identify and uncover new important components in this complex and highly varied plant. Perhaps this perspective stems from a personal bias born of years of dedication. But from this author's point of view, the progress aloe vera has made in the last 10 years, the discoveries unsheathed about its curative potential, and the search for its force factor ingredient make for as exciting reading as any adventure novel ever conceived. We will try to add our contribution toward telling its tale on these pages in hopes that it will not only shed proper light on the new treks the healing plant has made across the galaxy of scientific awareness, but also to bring into focus just what this plant means to all of us in context of our daily lives. With that in mind, we need to examine just a handful of the landmark discoveries that have taken place over the last few years. Not as the be-all and end-all, but as indications of the potentials that await us in the future. And we caution you to be mindful of the fact that they are merely indications of what is to come, beacons of promise on what appears to be a limitless horizon. Dateline 1990, Dallas, Texas. Aloe vera, and specifically Ace Manin, the molecule many believe to contain the healing plant's active curative powers, are found to be highly effective in laboratory tests in the treatment of colitis and ulcerative colitis. Colitis refers to any inflammation in the colon, while ulcerative colitis involves ulcers and possible perforations of the walls of the large intestine. This new study under the auspices of Carrington Labs has established some protocols that set aloe vera juice and Ace Manin in the forefront of ulcerative colitis treatment. Approvals pending with the FDA and the Canadian IRB, International Review Board, may revolutionize the way colitis and even Crohn's disease are treated in future. Corroboration, Fujita Health Institute, Japan, 1992. Physician and research scientist Keisuke Fujita, MD, PhD, leads a research team in testing the effects of stabilized aloe vera in the treatment of gastric ulcers. In a study conducted on 12 laboratory rats with experimentally induced gastric ulcers, the Fujita research team finds that the rats treated with large oral doses of aloe show marked improvement over the controlled group of untreated rats. Historical precedent. Both treatments reinforce the very dramatic but often overlooked studies performed in 1963 by Florida osteopaths Blitz, Smith, and Girard. In their serial treatment of a large group of patients suffering from peptic ulcers at various levels of gravity, the Blitz-Smith group found that the recovery rate was remarkable in almost all the patients treated and concluded that, quote, there can be little doubt that the properties attributed to aloe vera should be therapeutically used in the management of peptic ulcers. Numerous patients completely recovered from an acute peptic ulcer episode and are now on preventive treatment. It is unmistakable that aloe vera gel, through whatever mechanism, is very beneficial in the treatment of this very important disease. The next step. Entirely new vistas and a broader level of acceptance have opened up for aloe vera in the application of ulcer therapy. Dateline. Fujita Health Institute, Japan, 1992. The Keisuke Fujita research team conduct another study of the use of aloe vera as a possible agent in the reduction of blood glucose in obese middle-aged diabetics. Blood samples were taken from the subjects, both NIDDM, non-insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus, and IDDM, insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus, and injected into laboratory mice whose blood glucose skyrocketed shortly thereafter. After treatment with aloe vera injections, the blood glucose level of all test groups of rats had completely normalized within 8 to 12 hours. Corroboration, Pennsylvania College of Podiatric Medicine, 1991. Numerous studies on the effects of aloe vera in the treatment of conditions concomitant with diabetes mellitus are conducted by research groups headed by Robert Davis, Ph.D. In their various studies, the Davis research teams have found stabilized aloe vera compounds to be dramatically effective in the treatment of wounds, edema, and pain that commonly accompany the condition. Additionally, his study on the effect of aloe vera and gibberellin in the treatment of inflammatory pathologies concomitant with diabetes showed remarkably effective inhibitive capacities without any of the tissue addiction found so commonly in applications of steroids to treat the same conditions. The next step. Tests are underway as of this writing to further explore aloe vera's impact on the treatment of diabetes in humans and the rather lengthy list of side effects and pathologies contingent to it. Since we are involved in some of them and the results are not yet complete, discretion prompts us to be silent. However, we can say that the findings we have encountered thus far may prove more promising than any preceding. Dateline, Dallas, Texas, 1990. Dr. Terry Pulse, MD, clinically treats a number of AIDS patients with aloe vera. In a study of more than 6 months' duration, Dr. Pulse administers a megadose compound of aloe vera gel to a group of volunteer patients, all of whom are HIV positive from degrees on the MD Anderson rating scale, varying from HIV-2 or AIDS-related complex, ARC, to HIV-11, full-blown AIDS in a pronounced state of advancement. As a criterion for compatibility, none of the patients are taken off of their current medication or treatment, including AZT. After treatment of 31 patients in the sample, he has found that the majority have seen a reversal of their condition, some to HIV zero positive, one to HIV zero negative, a dramatic rise in their T cell count, and astounding levels of improvement. Corroboration, 1990, Carrison. Under the auspices of Carrington Labs, a group of doctors conduct early research on AIDS patients at various levels of severity who use 800 to 1,000 milligrams of ACE-Manin a day. to treat severely ill AIDS patients with 20 ounces a day of aloe vera juice containing the same dosage of the ACE mannan molecule. Initial evaluations that the treatment may mimic the effectiveness of AZT without the toxic side effects. Secondary in vitro test tube studies determine that the ACE mannan introduced to the AIDS virus appears to do away with the opportunistic infections concomitant with HIV and offer a superb palliative to AIDS sufferers at a much lower cost than AZT. If some of these dramatic findings seem intensely sensationalist, they were not intended to be so. They simply are what they appear to be. Potentially landmark breakthroughs in some of the most difficult to treat pathologies known to modern science. Ulcerations in the colon and small intestines, for example, have catapulted intestinal cancer into the number two position as a major cancer killer. Tens of millions of people worldwide suffer from various stages of diabetes and endure lives of unspeakable discomfort, pain, suffering, and debilitation because of it. AIDS needs no fanfare. It may very well be the pale horse of the apocalypse and needs every conceivable attempt at whatever healing modalities are available in the struggle to counteract its pernicious effects. Could it be, then, that all these conditions and more can be treated successfully and with dramatic results by one simple plant or by active ingredients from that plant? Even now, the scientific community and the world of medicine resist the inclination to believe that any such reductionist viewpoint could even be conceived of as possible. Yet the evidence continues to mount, and what we have read, just in these three reviews, are merely the advance guard of a legion of data that now pours in monthly, most of it favoring the broad-spectrum capabilities of aloe vera and promoting its further exploration. By way of note, it isn't by accident that these three major areas of treatment and testing involve diseases of a systemic nature with only peripheral mention of topical use. Aloe vera, after all, is at last and at least acknowledged to be a redoubtable topical treatment for conditions ranging from burns and wounds to contusions and hematoma. What continues to be resisted is the fact that there is more to it, that its tapestry of healing potentials continues to be woven and expanded with new threads in a seeming unending pattern of growth. All this continues to lend issue to the fact that if aloe vera is perhaps one of the most versatile, adaptable, and compatible healants in the annals of recorded medicine, then it is a point well taken. It is also, by the very nature of its adaptability, its broad-spectrum utility, and its seeming omnipresence in the world of science, medicine, and, we blanch at making the comparison, the world of cosmetology and personal grooming. In fact, no matter how dramatic the medical breakthroughs, no matter how exponential the clinical data that favor it, the very issue of aloe vera's absolute versatility will always render it suspect. It is, frankly, an antiquarian bias and needs to be put to rest once and for all. First, however, some barriers have to be broken. It is our profound belief and hope that aloe vera, the inside story, will accomplish that end. And it is to that end that we dedicate ourselves now and into the next millennium. The arrows point the way. Much of the proof is here intact. Let this book be the doorway to a new era of discovery, and these chapters help to open the windows of our consciousness and let in the fresh air of enlightenment. Chapter 2, Aloe History, Some Insights. The True Aloe. Before we begin our brief chronology, it is most important to identify and define the subject of which we speak. The term aloe is now used almost generically to describe one narrow spectrum of plants within the entire family of aloes, which actually number in excess of 200 different species, 150 alone in the botanical family Liliaceae. All aloes belong, in fact, to the family named after that beautiful biblical flower, but then so do onions and asparagus, as well as tulips and daffodils. So the family covers a broad range of flavors, bouquets, and personal appearances, most of which are either pretty to look at or good to eat, or in the case of aloes, useful in the healing of its fellow creatures. In fact, aloes can be all of the above because the aloe vera plant, for example, puts out a beautiful bloom at certain times of the year and, take our word for it, makes an exceptionally flavorful wine. Like all other aloes in the Liliaceae family, aloe vera in its various identities is a leaf succulent. Its thick leaves are fleshy in appearance and taper along thorny ridges to give them a fearsome spear-like appearance. Not surprising, then, in some societies, such as those of primitive Java, it acquired the name crocodile's tongue, or likened to the tail of a giant crab, as it was often described in 9th century China. In fact, if you don't know what you're doing when you handle the leaves, they can cause some discomfort, though nothing like a cactus. And in areas where the plant is harvested, it is recommended that workers wear gloves. By and large, however, aloe vera is a benevolent plant and responds well to good treatment. Heavy on the sun and wind and low on the water usually keeps it pert and healthy. The term aloe stems from the Arabic aloe, which means shining bitter substance, a description used to define the mucilage gel found in the leaf itself and long believed to contain the bulk of the plant's healing potency. Even today, aloe vera is listed in the United States Pharmacopeia as bitter aloes and given reference there only as the source for aloin, a strong purgative. Frankly, that reference dates back to the early 1930s and is in serious need of revision. But some pharmacological predispositions die hard, even in the face of mountainous data. The plant that was bound to make history. Accounts of aloe have spread throughout primitive societies, seemingly since records have been kept. Even through the modern era, primitive cultures such as those of the Bushmen in the African Congo would apply whole split aloe vera leaves on open wounds to heal them. They would also wash in the gel of various aloes prior to a hunt to kill their scent and to fend off insects. In fact, aloe vera makes an excellent insect repellent and is now used often in context with coriander and sold commercially as a natural deodorant. In fact, you can now find modern applications of aloe vera for everything from soap and shampoo to room fresheners and insect bite poultices, all of which had viable beginnings in ancient civilized cultures. Earliest historical references to aloe vera can be traced to Sumerian clay tablets, circa 1750 BC, a pharmacological reference noted, in fact, for intemperate stomach and nausea. And yes, even though this is the bane of some critics, aloe is referred to in the Old Testament and the Psalms of Solomon. Illustrations of aloes have appeared on the walls of the Egyptian tombs, and indication of it having been a medicine as well as an adjunct in the embalming process are recorded in Egyptian records. In his De Materia Medica in 74 AD, the Greek physician Dioscorides listed a number of its benefits, including its abilities to regulate the bowels, repress boils, heal wounds by conglutination or congealing, reduce chapping, heal genital ulcers, perhaps herpes too, ameliorate tonsillitis, and helping get rid of hemorrhoids. His Roman contemporary, Pliny the Elder, describes aloe in his Natural History as showing a capacity for soothing headaches, alleviating bleeding mouths and gums, possibly gingivitis, removing hemorrhoids, hangnails, and blisters. It was also believed possibly helpful in the restoration of hair and as an injection for digestive complications. Transition. It is believed by students of the subject that many of aloe's occurrences throughout the world, and especially the Eastern Hemisphere, were not indigenous to those areas, but were in fact the result of the plants having been transported from one culture to another. In the New World of the Americas, the spread of aloe vera's usage can be credited to two major groups. Folklore and legend point to its use in Mesoamerican societies of the Mayan Indians of the Yucatan and the Seminoles of what would become Florida, Indians of the Caribbean islands of Hispaniola, Cuba, and Curaçao were said to have used it for insect bites, abrasions, wounds, burns, and various internal maladies from indigestion to catarrh or colds. However, actual records of aloe's intensified usage seem to be attributable to the 15th and 16th century explorers, and most notably the clerics who traveled with them. This is particularly true of the Jesuits, and to some extent the Franciscan friars of Spain. Renowned not only for their seminal teaching methods and their somewhat individualistic perceptions of church doctrine, the priests of the Society of Jesus were also the medics and pharmacologists of the Vatican coterie. Having complete command of the Greek and Roman pharmacological texts of Pliny and Dioscorides, as well as an instinct for the best ways of growing fresh aloe vera, these mendicant priests were probably its most zealous proponents. The labors of the Jesuits, however, were appreciated far better in the new lands to which they traveled than in their own European community. This was partly due to the emergence of a new kind of religious schism in Europe in the form of the Protestant Reformation. With the prevalence of religious wars and entire nations espousing new offshoots of Christianity, anything to do with the Church of Rome was held suspect, especially any work done by the order commonly believed to be its locus of power. Couple this with another phenomenon of the time, the inability of the plant to withstand the freezing cold climates of Northern Europe, and you have some fair measure of the reasons for aloe vera's decline both in popularity and public awareness in early modern Europe. Much of this disrepute can be laid at the feet of a single factor, weather. Aloe, a highly versatile, persistently durable plant in any warm weather climate, simply could not withstand the freezing winters of Central and Northern Europe, and by and large the plants brought to those cultures perished. As we shall soon see, aloe vera has traditionally been very difficult to stabilize, so most tinctures, elixirs, and gums derived from it had little of the curative benefit ascribed to the plant before or since, except in the presentation for which it survives even to this day as a strong laxative. Despite all the emphasis on aloe's purgative properties during this period in history, inferences as to its other healing properties continued to persist. In 1801, for instance, pharmacologist Guillaume Olivier noted innumerable accountings in the Caribbean islands of aloe vera's unique abilities to regulate women's menstrual periods. In India, during that same period, it was believed to be a potent agent in inducing pregnancy. And in the medical annals of Northern Europe, it was used as a tonic to treat consumption, a dread pandemic for which there was no known cure at the time. What's more, though it may have fallen from use for human beings during this transitional period in history, aloe remained a perennial favorite among veterinary practitioners. Again, during its transition to the modern era, it is not in the capricious scientific communities of the Western world, but in the so-called Third World where aloe vera originally enjoyed its most consistent support and documentation. At the turn of the 20th century, for example, the healing plant struck the interest of a physician, Sir George Watt, who was at the time serving as chief medical officer with British troops in India. His work entitled A Dictionary of the Economic Products of India featured a section devoted almost exclusively to extolling the virtues of aloe, both as an individual therapy and in a number of highly effective combinations. Mixed with a substance called bartung, for example, it was found to be effective against chronic discharges from the nose and ears. Mixed in a paste, it was used to reduce surface swelling of wounds and as an agent in absorption. And taken internally, it was used by medical practitioners of northern India to ameliorate melancholia, brain diseases, and what we now refer to as gastritis. Taken internally, it was given as a night pill to alleviate hemorrhoids. Combined with gum asphaltum, it was applied as a warm plaster in colic and pneumonia in infants. Modern times. In the early 20th century in the United States, certain cottage industries flourished, including one established by Colonel H.W. Johnson of Kentucky, who processed and marketed a gel from the plant for use internally for stomach ulcers, as a purgative, the traditional use, and for various kinds of dermatological complications. Of course, the treatment of dermatological complications of various sorts are what aloe is most renowned for doing, and it is to that extent that it is most broadly accepted for use today. Not surprising, then, that the earliest documented 20th century evaluations of aloe in the U.S. should come in the form of clinical studies involving its topical treatment, specifically for burns. In 1934, Dr. C.E. Collins and his son, Creston Collins, a research scientist, reported their very positive findings in their use of a compound of fresh aloe in the treatment of Roentgen ray dermatitis or dermatitis burns from X-rays
This finding was corroborated to some degree by a report 2 years later from Carol S. Wright, M.D., who reported the effects of the fresh gel on sequelae and X-ray ulceration. Even with ulceration of several years' duration, Dr. Wright reported, the response to treatment from the aloe was remarkably good. A far more impactful study with a larger group of patients was conducted in 1953 under the auspices of the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission at its Radiation Burn Center at Los Alamos Proving Grounds. In their experiments, research scientists Lushbaugh and Hale tested groups of 10 rabbits, first exposing them to beta irradiation, then treating them with fresh aloe gel and a commercially prepared aloe ointment. After several months of testing, the doctors were able to determine that, quote, treatment was found to hasten both the degenerative and reparative phases of the lesion so that complete healing of an ulcer of 28,000 rep of beta irradiation was accomplished within 2 months of treatment. Since in this work we are focusing primarily on the internal uses of aloe, we find it particularly important to note that one of the most significant breakthroughs of that time involved studies in 1949 by four research scientists from the Michigan Department of Health. In their studies in the antibacterial potentials of certain seed plants in the treatment of Mycobacterium tuberculosis, Gottsall, Lucas, Lichtfeld, and Roberts found that Aloe chinensis and Aloe succotrina both showed capacities for treating this bacteria that showed consistently beneficial characteristics. Not surprisingly, some of the testing methods used were inaccurate, primarily because these researchers were not entirely informed as to the nature and origins of aloes and lumped aloe vera in a category with other aloes under the misapprehension that there would be significant differences between them. In fact, one of the two evaluated most effective, Aloe chinensis, was in fact merely a regional classification for aloe vera. Again, the report, like most of that time, was determined to be inconclusive, and it was only a few years after that tuberculosis, as we perceive it, was no longer deemed a major health threat. Yet these findings are enjoying renewed interest in view of the fact that new, more virulent tuberculosis strains have suddenly reemerged to threaten the health of entire communities, including those in Central Africa and even in the United States. More than a decade after the Gottsall-Lucas studies, another study, this time a bacteriological one involving a number of pernicious strains, determined that aloe did inhibit Staphylococcus aureus, Staphylococcus pyogenes, Corynebacterium xerosus, Shigella paradysenteri, Salmonella typhosa, and Salmonella paratyphi. In layman's terms, the study by a group of researchers in 1963 determined that the healing plant was effective against a broad range of bacteria and viruses that cause such manifestations as various kinds of staph infections, pussing, dry and itchy skin, certain types of dysenteric parasites, and contagious and non-contagious typhoid. The 1963 bacteriological studies were impressive in that they tend to epitomize what has always been the phenomenon of aloe, its broad-spectrum healing potentials, both for internal and external applications. To be sure, it's not entirely unusual to find a drug, plant, or medication that is capable of working both topically on the skin or internally to good effect. But usually its parameters of application are limited. What is so highly remarkable is the consistent broad-spectrum healing potentials that aloe in particular possesses, a phenomenon that only grows and widens as volumes of research continue to be undertaken and more findings continue to be revealed. This is particularly true of the modern era, especially in the last 10 years of research, development, and application. In fact, as we approach the new millennium, both the depth and scope of aloe's influence as a healant and as a highly facilitative adjunct appear to be bringing it to even loftier positions in the pharmacopoeia of the future. Recent findings from head to toe. It might be said that in the last decade and a half, more research, clinical application, and hands-on testing has been done on aloe than in the previous half century combined. Credit this in part to the wide level of public acceptability the plant has enjoyed throughout the world and the fact that a number of the broad body of scientific professionals have finally seen the light. It isn't surprising, then, that several current proponents of aloe vera have broken new ground in its experimentation, study, and practical application. We will touch upon the work of some of them here. As we do, we emphasize that this is being examined here primarily to illustrate the massive body of work done in the aloe in the last decade and a half, and not to cover these particular discoveries in exact detail. One of the longest-standing advocates of aloe in the last 15 years has been renowned research scientist James Fulton, an MD, PhD, renowned biochemist and head of the Acne Research Institute in Newport Beach, California. Dr. Fulton originally came to national media attention by means of his studies on the comedogenicity of many major brands of makeup and nationally recognized brands of personal care products for women. In brief, comedogenic properties in skincare products relates to the degree to which they tend to induce acne when applied to skin tissue. In 1977, it was Dr. Fulton who discovered that many ingredients commonly used in these products, such as isopropyl myristate, were highly inclined to induce acne and should be removed from any skincare products. By reporting his findings to the CTFA, the Cosmetics and Toiletries Foundation of America, Dr. Fulton helped revolutionize the way an entire industry approaches its manufacture and quality control of products. In fact, most manufacturers eliminated all comedogenic ingredients from their product lines. However, one thing most failed to do was to eliminate the comedogenic potential of other ingredients in the products. Cosmetics are largely water-based. And since the CTFA, a self-regulating industry association, establishes guidelines that are more permissive than pharmaceutical-grade products, there is perennially the potential for bacterial growth in these personal care cosmetics. The great power of aloe-based cosmetics, then, lies not only in the fact that they are able to rebuild, regenerate, and restore skin tissue, but also in the fact that they are able to either kill harmful microorganisms or stop them dead in their tracks. This, of course, requires a proper understanding of the levels at which aloe is effective, and in fact superior in terms of forming the foundation for products that are hypoallergenic, non-comedogenic, and in fact highly nutritive to the skin. I was able to interest Dr. Fulton in aloe as the fundamental ingredient in personal care products, products with pharmaceutical-grade standards for efficacy. And it was through that association that his interest in aloe expanded to further explorations into the potentials of the silent healer and all that it could do. In 1984 and again in 1989, Dr. Fulton conducted a series of double-blind studies on dermabrasion using our aloe formula as a medium for the test group. Dermabrasion is a means of removing scars from patients by using high-speed brushes that literally scrape away scar tissue and allow the skin to rebuild. Usually, after the dermabrasion process, the attending physician will prescribe heavy doses of antibiotics, both orally and topically, to prevent the spread of infection. Using stabilized aloe vera on the test group, both topically and internally in place of antibiotics, Dr. Fulton found that it worked even better than any other modality used in the control group, and that topically it worked exceptionally well in breaking down the scab formation that so notoriously slows the healing process. Once again, it is its effective tandem use internally and topically that brings us to understand the true synergistic impact of this remarkable healing plant. Therapeutic studies that examine aloe's powerful effect against numerous microorganisms continues to increase both in depth and breadth of scope, as does its impact in wound healing and examinations of its regenerative qualities. Admittedly, we continue to focus on dermatological studies even through this decade because it is dermatologists who often promote bacteriological explorations and lab tests to determine aloe's ability to kill various strains of microorganisms. For example, in 1988, in a double-blind animal study on plastic reconstructive surgery, the Rodriguez-Bigas research group found that animals treated with aloe healed from their burns completely within 30 days. In contrast, a control group treated with sulfadiazine of standard burn medicament took over 50 days on average to heal. A well-documented study by Drs. Grinley and Reynolds in 1986 showed a traditionally prepared aloe leaf gel had been used to treat a variety of inflammatory conditions from topically infected wounds to systemic rheumatoid arthritis to a highly positive effect. Encouraged by these results, another research group led by L.A. Hart and P.H. Nibbering in 1990 conducted a rather complex study on the, quote, low molecular constituents from aloe gel on oxidative metabolism and bacterial activities of human neutrophils, unquote. Translation, neutrophils are a specific type of leukocyte white blood cell the human system often uses in the combating of diseases. In a test using gel freshly extracted from the plant and testing against two microorganisms, Staph aureus and Candida albicans, the Hart-Nibbering group found that taken together the constituents from the aloe gel did greatly reduce the negative effects that the neutrophils might have, such as ROS, at the site of infection, while allowing all the good qualities, such as intracellular killing of these infectious microorganisms, to remain intact. In a potentially landmark finding by McDaniel, McAnally, and White in 1987, this group of researchers conducted a series of in vitro studies that found acemannan, a pivotal molecule found in aloe, to be effective against viral strains such as herpes simplex, measles, and the AIDS virus. And in a separate in vivo study in laboratory animals, found it effective against the herpes simplex virus. In vitro refers to studies done literally in glass or glass media, either test tube, petri dish, or similar glass medium substances. In vivo tests are any tests conducted on living subjects, either patients or laboratory animals. In a separate study by the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio, Dr. Wendell Winters reported that findings in their labs and others confirmed that properly stabilized compounds extracted from aloe in treatment of immune cell subpopulations with aloe substances did in fact prompt an increase in lymphocyte reproduction. At the same time, they strengthened the ability of red blood cells to agglutinate or reform. Another encouraging step in the examination of aloe as a potential immunoenhancer in the fight against pernicious immune system pathogens such as the AIDS virus. One of the most avid devotees of active aloe research and verification in recent years has been Dr. Robert H. Davis, a Ph.D. and professor in physiology at Pennsylvania College of Podiatric Medicine. Dr. Davis has conducted a number of studies in the use of stabilized aloe vera for a broad spectrum of conditions. Persistently pursuing the truth about the healing plant, Dr. Davis has collaborated with a number of eminent research clinicians to determine aloe vera's efficacy in treating conditions ranging from wounds to adjuvant arthritis. His studies on aloe extracts in treating various conditions related to diabetes are truly exceptional and will be given specific study later. We mention these here to point out a couple of significant findings. The first one involved a study that reported that aloe vera and gibberellin, now considered an important component of aloe vera, both exhibited profoundly effective anti-inflammatory abilities when administered to laboratory animals. In his conclusion, Dr. Davis reported, quote, unlike steroids, aloe vera and gibberellin inhibit inflammation but do not retard wound healing. This study helps redefine inflammation as it relates to wound healing. In another equally significant study, Dr. Davis, as a member of the Denise C. Hanley and William Solomon research team, reported that aloe extract, when tested against a number of other non-steroidal substances, ascorbic acid, thymus extract, and DNA extract, rated to be the most potent anti-inflammatory agent in the treatment of adjuvant or rheumatoid arthritis. In the last decade in particular, there has been a genuine interest in the value of aloe vera and the active ingredients from aloe in the treatment of various kinds of cardiovascular conditions, especially heart disease. These were inspired, if not directly influenced, by a long-term study reported in 1985 by Indian physician O.P. Agarwal. An MD and research scientist, Dr. Agarwal led a study of over 5,000 patients from 35 to 65 years of age, all of whom had been diagnosed with heart conditions. A study conducted and reviewed every 3 months for a year period revealed that aloe vera, when taken internally in a blend with the husk of isabgol, did in fact improve the conditions in 95% of the patients in the study. By sheer force of numbers and dimensions, this study marks one of the turning points for the progress of aloe vera in its internal uses and in cardiovascular conditions. We will review this study in an upcoming chapter called Affair of the Heart. By this time, we are aware of the fact that we have finally torn the veil of resistance to aloe vera's use by the medical profession and feel at least reasonably secure that a representative majority of conscientious practitioners are now acknowledging and using aloe for its external benefits. Now it's time we broke through to the other side, the inside. I say unequivocally and believe wholeheartedly that this is where the key will be finally unlocked to reveal the multifarious wonders of this remarkable healing plant. The answers, many of them, are the inside story.